First Sunday. The Blue Book, Saratoga Springs, 1906. If he is the boy in the Blue Book, where to start? He can't expect to recognize her after 4 decades, and he certainly doesn't expect her to recognize him. The last time they saw each other, he would have been no more than 6. Firm memory of childhood eludes him until about 8 years old, and before that, it's mostly whispers of sound and images flashing like photographs. A dead boy lying on the ground. A grand house. A tall woman with black hair and a soothing voice. A year ago, walking down a street in Albany, he heard a dozen syllables of someone singing Alouetta through an open second-story window. The song twitched a strong nerve of memory from the deep past, a ribbon of road stretching forward, a swath of starry sky visible between tops of pine trees, a thin pairing of moon, a brown-eyed mother hugging him close and pointing out the patterns of constellations, telling their names and stories. Entrained with those hazy memories came a surging feeling, something like love. First Sunday of August, early afternoon, James Blake walks through the heavy front doors of the retreat, carrying a marbled journal and a book bound in dark blue nubby cloth, bristling with torn newspaper placemarks. He wears his best gray suit, a club collar shirt bleached perfect white, a striped black and gray waistcoat, a coral silk tie knotted loose. 3 steps inside the door, he removes his hat, a new boater, and walks purposefully to the front desk like he belongs there. The desk clerk looks him over and then pauses long enough to make sure Blake becomes aware that his shade of skin has been noted. The clerk, maybe 50, thinning hair combed straight back, teeth marks intact, finally says, "May I help?" Blake hands him a small envelope, says, "Could you deliver this to a guest, Mrs. Davis?" The clerk pats the envelope down onto his desktop without taking his eyes off Blake. He turns his palms up and says, "She's expecting you?" "I doubt it." "You're not here to interview her for some publication?" "No." The clerk rings for a bellboy and then says, "You might be more comfortable waiting outside. Turn left and there are benches. We'll notify you if Mrs. Davis is available." "Here in front of the fireplace will be better, so I'll see her when she arrives." The lobby of the retreat matches every detail of public rooms in tasteful modern resort hotels designed in the arts and crafts style. Limbert furniture, Boise rugs, Roycroft lighting. Except, faint and far down one of the long corridors, James thinks he hears someone scream. He shifts uncomfortably in the strict angles of an oak and leather settle facing the massive stone hearth. Broad windows and French doors look out across a green and blue landscape. Fields, woods, valleys, hills. A few people scattered around the great room read books and flat papers from Boston and New York and Philadelphia. In a corner, a tousled young blonde woman sits bowed in concentration at the piano, trying to play Sunflower Slow Drag. It keeps getting away from her until she gives up and plays at half speed. Over the big hearth, a sentiment cuts deep into the massive keystone, lettered like a Gothic forgery on a famous man's grave marker. It reads, "What lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us." Emerson. James stands and traces each letter with his forefinger, as if writing the sentence for the first time. It works to establish balance, like perfectly equal pinches of sand in each cup of a set of scales. And then he draws a deep breath and blows it all away.